Hello, welcome to another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Aaron, it is you and I today. We're missing our co-worker, friend, and part-time co-host of the podcast. Jeff is on, he's out working today. He's traveling, probably buying fertilizer. Hope he's buying it cheap.
But I hope so.
We'll find out.
I mean, I feel like a lot of wisdom left when he isn't here. But
a giant sucking sound of just the wisdom fleeing the company. But in the podcast room is Aaron Bledsoe, our regular guest. And before we get started, Aaron, we got the question of the day. And this one, I teed this up just for you. And you can tell the listeners and give them kind of the current events. And our wives never listen to this, so we're safe. What projects are on your honey-do list, and what excuses are you using to get out of them?
My honey-to-do list has been very long since about March.
What happened in March?
Well, I mean, last November, we found out we were pregnant with our second child, and I feel like the nesting stage started a lot earlier this pregnancy. So there was outside work to be done, inside work to be done. There was just a lot. I feel like I accomplished a lot this year, but right now that list is still pretty long after he's already here and everything. And yeah, so we're a month and a half into this with the new kid and her second kid. And yeah, that, I don't know. I don't even know where to start on the list. The excuse that I'm using right now is like, well, it's, you know, harvest is starting.
Oh, good one.
Yeah. Harvest is starting. You know, we got a new kid. Like, let's just enjoy the holding them and enjoying that whole thing. They're not that small this long.
Nice.
Yeah. But no, I still have some yard work to get done. I got a fence. I've pressure washed the inside of the fence. I got a white vinyl fence and I have to pressure wash the outside of it. And that one, I'm just like, well, it's just, you know, I'm going to spray some soap on it the next time it rains and that'll take a lot of it off. And Mother Nature, you know, this year can't, you know, we couldn't get away from the water. Now, in the last month and a half, it's like, no, I'm not going to give you anything to even get anything done. So here we are. I've got a nursery to finish because we did not find out what it was until he showed up. So,
I remember that. You guys did old school.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a surprise when he came out. I mean, I was dead set thinking it was a girl, but he came out.
So you got to paint?
I got to paint. You know, I got to do the board and batten. Yeah, wallpaper. Evidently, wallpaper's coming back in style.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but I think it's easier now from what they say. They say it just kind of like a peel and stick instead of, you know, you got to do the glue and all that. So. I don't know. I'll let you know when it's done here in about a year.
My wife is like a Shiite anti-wallpaper. I mean, if you got wallpaper in your house, do not have her come in because she will yank it. If she sees a little piece that she can get a fingernail under, she'll just rip it. And that's her excuse and commitment. Once she does that she has to take all of it off.
Yeah. I got good at taking it off. I took it all off at our old house, but now I'm going to put it back up. So. But
I'd fake an injury.
I don't know what injury to fake with that. What, I mean, I blew my knee out. I can't stand.
Hamstring. Yeah. Hammy. Got a hammy.
Well, that's a legit thing there. What about you?
What projects are on your honey-do list? And I don't know. I've got a pile of dirt at the end of the driveway that has irritated her to no end. I cut a little road. Our driveway is right in the corner. And when there's corn in the field that's on the inside of the corner, you can't see around the corner very well. So you got kind of a blind turn in the driveway. Well, and then I also have the shop, which I built a couple years ago. And it's about, I don't know, it's down the road, a couple hundred yards from the end of the driveway. So what I did was I cut a drive that goes along the road. So I put a road by the road. Mm-hmm. And it is kind of handy because Kate or somebody on the Fort Ranger, they can just run. They don't have to get on the road. They just run down through there. But in doing that, I stuck a big pile conveniently right at the end of our driveway. And I've nibbled on it every once in a while. You know, you need a bucket of dirt here, a bucket of dirt there. But I've had this mound of dirt at the end of the driveway that's, of course, it grew up in weeds and you had to spray it. But all summer I couldn't get it because I didn't want to mess the gravel up in the drive that went by it, right? So then there was crops in the field by it, and they couldn't get to it. So post-harvest, I'm not sure what I'll have to make up some excuse to leave it, because now I'm kind of getting attached to it. I kind of like it there. It's like a Indian mound, like a tail in the Middle East. If there's something special under there, I don't know.
I don't know. There's something about a pile of dirt and being a boy or a man. And it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good pile of dirt.
Yeah, it's kind of nice having some
if
dirt.
I get rid of it, why, I won't have one.
Yeah. Like, but I might need it. Like, there might be a hole that opens up. I might need it.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And if I go spread it around somewhere, it'll be all gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
She'll tell me to move it then. Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah. What is going on? I think we had a report come out last week, Friday.
Yeah. Last week, September 12th, we had the September WASDE report come out.
Slam some wisdom on us.
Boy, well, like I said, Jeff's gone. So the wisdom left the room. the market definitely felt like they wanted to see the corn yield drop and across the board. I don't know. There's very few people out there that I've seen or read that they're still saying, no, you know, that yield wasn't high enough or we need to hold it. It's just the way we finished out this year. In some places still finished out pretty well, but for our neck of the woods, Southwest Indiana, August just
dry.
Yeah. Moisture just stopped on a year where we couldn't get away from it. It just finally stopped. And, most of the market felt like the corn yield should be lowered. They did do that. The one piece that they surprised us with was they upped the acreage again.
It's like, where'd they come from?
Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking numbers. I think the last time I looked, I think 1933 was the last time we had an acreage number that was this high. I think 32 was the all-time record. I mean, folks, we're having to go all the way back to the 30s to find.
That's like 100 years ago.
Yeah. To find acreage numbers that are this high. And so, you know, net, you know, really they dropped the yield 2.1 bushels down to 186.7. They upped the harvested acres to 90. That's an even 90 million acres. So really on the production side, you know, that was another 72 million bushels. I don't know.
That's the plus?
The plus was that they lowered the yield.
Okay.
That is the plus. And they're showing willingness to lower it. So, you know, if we look at this past year, right, this 24-25 crop, if we look at where they started and where they finished, you know, they started at 181, raised it some, lowered it back down. Production, you know, the ending stocks or the stocks to use rate that I really like to look at for this old crop, 24-25, they started out really high or higher than where they finished, much higher than where they finished. And so that's typical. I mean, you start to see as you go through the entire crop cycle, you get a better feel for where everything's at. And usage either comes up, comes down, but you start to narrow that picture down as you roll into this new crop, which is where we're at now for this 25-26. And right now they're starting out with a stocks to use rate of 13.1%. So as far as what that means, it's ending stock wise, that's over 2 billion bushel carryout. And typically that is a very burdensome.
That sounds
level.
Like a lot.
Yeah, it is. I mean, anytime in the, what I've gathered is, and what I've heard for as long as we've been doing this is when you get above 2 billion, there's a psychological factor of the corn, the market just, it feels perfectly fine. It doesn't need diddly anything for corn.
Corn everywhere.
Yeah. It's corn everywhere. We don't honestly know what we're going to do with all of it is what it feels like. So 13.1% stocks to use rate. The last time we saw that was 2019. And every year is different. 2019, I have gone back to that because it does feel kind of like that. You know, 2019 was a delayed planting. It was a little slower. Now the summers and I think that played out a little differently. But they had talked about big acreage numbers. I remember that year coming in for the plot day in August that year, and they surprised the market. And because everybody thought there's no way we planted, I think it was 94 million acres that year or something like that.
It was a big number.
Yeah. And they were like, there's no way. I mean, we couldn't get it in the ground. It was wet everywhere. And then they came back and they said, no, you did that plus a little bit. And then as that cycle went through, they kept lowering that number down. That was a year where they adjusted the yield, I think, quite significantly. It just wasn't quite what they thought it was as we went through. Like I said, as we went through that fall and got into 2020, we started to realize where that situation was with the crop that we just harvested. So, but the reason I bring that one up is, again, that was the last time we'd kind of been around that 13% stocks to use rate. And so, you know, everyone's wondering like, well, where's this market going to go? And I'll give the market one thing right now. I feel like it's holding pretty well. I mean, no one likes the prices, but it could be a lot worse.
Yeah, when you say it's holding pretty well, it's true. Whenever you say 2.1 bushels or no, not, no 2 billion bushels, yeah, 2 yeah. billion bushels and 13%, and you tell us you like to have it below 10, right?
Yeah, below 10 on corn, that's where the market starts to feel like, okay, maybe there needs to be a little bit of premium, or maybe we need to watch out on how the planting weather and all that stuff's playing out, because we use so much corn domestically, which is great. That is what is insulating us right now on this corn market.
Is our domestic use.
Is the domestic use. And the sheer demand numbers that they're penciling in for this crop is very significant. So the demand side is what's holding this thing up right now. If there is any chink in the armor, it would be if demand starts to reel back. Now, a way to incentivize demand or to get these types of levels is cheap prices, right? You use more of it when it's cheaper. You know, if you look at the cattle market a couple of years ago, they did not like buying $6-7 corn to put into cattle that weren't nearly where they are now. Whereas where now you've got the cattle market up and you've got corn prices down, so the feed usage starts to make a lot more sense. And so they've got the feed usage bumped up significantly from the 24-25 and even the 23-24 crop. I have a big question mark on that. I'm not a livestock guy, but I've been told nothing but the cattle situation does not fix itself very quickly. So to hit that feed usage
number, what are they feeding it to?
Yeah, like it's got to come from, you know, chickens, poultry, the turkey, that whole poultry market. Or it's got to come from hogs, and I'm just not well informed enough on the livestock market to say, but I know my gut says that number is pretty significantly high. I think that one comes back down, and so that does not help the stocks to use rate. Now, I think the yield could continue to be trimmed, regardless of how we feel nationwide. This still looks like a record yield. It just does. You're talking for it not to be, we're going to have to pull another, the record was 179.3. We're sitting at 186.7 now. So, I mean, minimum, you're going to have to pull 7-8 bushels off of this thing to not hit another record on top of acreage that is even higher than what it was last year.
Yeah.
So no matter how we slice it, we're looking at a big crop. And that's just what we're looking at right now. It, as far as like perspective on prices, you know, that, I've talked about the 19-20 crop. At this time of year, those December 19 futures were in that 360 to 380. Right now, we're sitting in the, you know, 410s to 430s here lately. So we're in a better situation than we were then. It's just that there's a lot of corn.
Yeah,
but a lot of corn.
At least with the, they're holding with a four in front of it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's better than what we had thought it was potentially going to be. I mean, you know, you got into late July, early August, prices weren't this good. I mean, December futures finally broke $4 to the bottom side. That was a big psychological. It's like, oh my gosh, if it breaks four and goes sub four, where's the next level of resistance? Is it 385, 360? And I mean, if you're talking futures at 385, now you're talking 350 corn. If you're talking 350 D's futures, now you're talking $3 corn. You know, 325, 3. It was a very scary situation. Right now, she's holding. And I think a lot of it comes back to the 24-25 crop, this old one. You know, exports on that front was extremely good. And right now, I think one thing that's really holding us up is the export pace for the 25-26 is outpacing the 24-25 crop.
Hmm.
So that
exports are better.
Exports are running at a very good pace right now. Yes. Yep. Running at a very good pace right now. Now they are projecting us to export more corn this year. And again, I just said, right, U.S. is a huge domestic user of corn, but anytime you can supplement some of that usage with exports, that's just going to help hold prices or potentially bring them up, right? Any new demand is not bad for any of these markets, at least for price-wise.
You know, and after, trade agreements and everything, that was in the news cycle is so fast anymore, but going back to the summertime, you would hope that there were some export opportunities that would come up, and just like you said, would supplement anything we could have. Would be like dressing. I mean, mm-hmm. it'd be cherry on top of what you already have.
Yeah, and I think the last thing on the corn front that I would say is, you know, we've talked about exports and stocks to use rates, and brought up 19 and how that progressed into the 2020 year. You know, this 24-25 crop, you know, we started at above 10%. I forgot where we exactly started at this point last year for the 24-25 on stocks to use rate, but we got all the way down to 8.6 at this point. And when we just talked about anytime you get sub 10
in that September timeframe.
Well, yeah. So the September report, we'll talk about the 24-25 crop. There will be slight changes to it as that fiscal year kind of finished out, or that crop cycle finished out. Right. They upped exports on that one, 10 million bushels. So all said and done, that 8.6 is where that one is kind of looking like. They can still tweak it as we go along for the next couple of months, but that one is pretty well, the market feels pretty comfortable with that number. Sub 10, you see prices go. Well, why did we not see prices really run this summer when we kept seeing this old crop shrink in stocks? If that stocks to use rate keeps shrinking, that means we're using more of it.
Yeah.
And prices just didn't reflect that. And a lot of it was the market felt very comfortable with the idea of there's going to be 95 million acres of corn.
Jeez.
And so that was the big gorilla in the room was, yes, exports were running ahead of pace. So they've had to revise that number up multiple times for old crop. We had delayed planting. We had a stocks to use rate that continued to go down. I mean, we had a lot of these bells and whistles going off in the coal mine saying, hey, we've got a situation here. But in the back of everybody's mind was like, I think we're going to squeeze through. And man, if this 95 is real, there's going to be a lot of corn. And we don't need to worry about it. There's going to be plenty. And I think the other piece of it is, South America had a phenomenal corn crop. Their Safrina, or their second crop corn, was huge. I mean, they were pumping it out left and right. So beans are much more of a global market for us. I mean, we're trying to insulate that. I mean, with the new blending numbers that they're wanting to pump out for biodiesel oil, that doesn't mean it has to be soybean oil, but soybean oil is definitely a winner in that realm.
It's plentiful.
Yeah, it's very good for the U.S. market. You know, we're trying to insulate it. We're trying to say, okay, we're going to use this product domestically more so than relying on exports. So that's great for the soybean market. But when we've got plenty here at home on the corn front, we were relying on exports and the world just felt like the world has plenty of corn. And so we got sub 10% stocks to use rate and price just really didn't do a whole lot.
Yeah.
And we kept getting rain, even though it was delayed, it kept getting rain on this corn crop. And, but everybody's got an opinion on what the yield really should be. There's going to be so much variability out there. I think this year, I think there's going to be spots that we'll never see yields like they'll see this year. And there's going to be spots that are very underwhelming. So.
Yeah, Aaron, you're spot on I always look outside the window, right? I mean, you look at the crops around in the trade territory, but, we were so wet, we had so many rain events, and then we find out how big the wet holes are, even with tile. I mean, and the only thing is that areas have almost nothing, just zero, but then right next to it, it'll be 300 bushel corn, mm-hmm. not 10 yards away. And it's just a matter of how big those wet holes were and how big the zeros are going to be, but mm-hmm. there will be big yields. But I think it'll be variable, just like you said, Aaron. I think it'll be sometimes one farmer may have record yields in one field, and then, you know, south of the Camelsburg plant, I saw a field that was just bush hogged. I mean, there was just nothing there.
Yep. Yeah, it's been wild. It's been wild. It's a year that I think the entire market is ready to get it in the bin and done, and then say, okay, we know what happened now. I don't want to go back. Let's just move forward. Hope that next year is better than this. Cause this is, even if you have phenomenal yields, it seems like this has been a stressful year.
It just sure has.
It's a year that keeps on giving in the ag industry is what it feels like.
It took 3 months to get the crop in the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but you know, from a bean standpoint, they upped the area, harvested a little bit, basically, you know, 200,000 acres. So 80.3 is where they're at now. They started at 80.1 in August. Not a big revision there. They did drop the yield 0.1 of a bushel. So beans really kind of just hung steady. There wasn't a whole lot of movement in that one. Even the old crop, there really wasn't much movement in that number. I don't think they did anything except outside of maybe like a couple bushels here and there. But that one's sitting at a 6.9% stocks to use rate. So they did up the ending stocks 10 million bushels to 300 million. That one, anytime you get below six, that's where the bean market starts to feel, you know, uncomfortable. And they've got an average farm price of $10 penciled in right now in the September report. I don't really know what to say with beans. I mean, the gorilla in the room is the fact that we haven't sold China a single bushel for new crop.
Yeah.
Not a single one. And the longer this goes on, the tighter our window gets to hit exports. They did lower exports for beans. What was that? 20 million bushels. You have to wonder if that number doesn't come down. At any point, there could be a stroke of a pen, and next thing you know, this thing runs off. At some point, though, we're going to have to look to see what kind of damage has been done to this. And I just don't know. I mean, the crush has been phenomenal. They're penciling in another really big crush. It's just...
So domestic use is saving us with beans also.
Yeah.
And is that Brazil is just, again, back to their growing season? They had such a good growing season, and China's buying from Brazil pretty much.
Yeah. So the world has plenty of beans. Again, the world has plenty of beans, and beans are a global commodity at this point. We're trying to insulate ourselves with the biodiesel and things like that, but it, you know, it still takes time. Right. And I don't know. It does not feel good. And then you've got river levels that are, they're okay right now.
Look like it's low.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to be positive. Yeah. Barges are moving.
I can see a lot of bank.
Yeah.
We was over in Louisville over the weekend, and it looked low to me.
Yeah.
Still had barges moving. But.
Yeah. Barges are moving. They may not be hauling as much as they typically do, but barges are moving.
God, that would suck.
Yeah. You know, if you look at the stocks to use rate, it would suggest that prices should hold or be a little better. It's just that gorilla in the room is so large and so big. It's like, what are we going to do if they, you know, if we just run through this window of time where we typically move stuff? You know, this should be our moment to shine in the world. And our beans are cheap compared to some other options, and they're still not doing it. And so I don't know. There's a lot of dynamics going on there, more than I would ever even understand. I'm sure only a select few people even understand it, because they're the only ones in the rooms. But that China market is, we need it right now, but it does not look like a long-term solution. You know, we've just relied on it for so long. And you know, you've basically got a country that's saying, yeah, we want to be better insulated from the world so we can have our own domestic use. It's like, yeah, that sounds great, except you're buying it from Brazil, right? Yeah. So you're saying one thing, you're doing another. What reality is, you just don't want to buy from the US, yeah. Period. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. You don't like us. We're not real happy with you. We're playing this cat and mouse game right now. But on the backside of this, you know, you've got China who a couple of years ago, they said they want to lower the protein usage in their feed. I think from 13 to 10%. And it was like, they were supposed to get it done by like 2030 something. They did it. They've already done it.
Wow.
They've already lowered it. And now they're wanting to lower it again. So what that signals to me is that, and eventually they're not going to, if they hit that goal already, they've already hit the 10% goal, right? So that means they're not going to use as many beans because bean meal is a protein. They're not going to use as much potentially in their feed usage. So even if their hog herd, you know, stays the same, which is really big, they're just not going to have to use as much. Hmm. So if they continue to buy more from South America, that just means our piece of the pie got smaller.
Yeah.
Insert biodiesel. So we're going to see how that plays out. I don't know. There's a bunch of different things. I mean, logistically and location wise, it just depends where you're at. For us locally in Southwest Indiana, you know, it doesn't feel like we should have a record crop.
Yeah.
I would say, and I've been saying this to a lot of our customers for several months now. I mean, even in planning, it's like, we may be the worst looking house in the neighborhood, and we're not a bad looking house.
Yeah.
But we may not be the best looking house. Whereas the last couple of years we've been a really nice house in the neighborhood. And this year may just not be that. So it's tough, even from the commercial side, you know, from the elevator side, you got to watch your emotions when you look outside the back door and you're like, man, the crop's just, it's just not what they say it is. And it's like, you know, we ought to get this. We ought to get these values. And it's like, yeah, but there's some really good stuff out there. And one big piece of the pie right now is the fact that you've got a Southeast market that was coming off of one of their worst crops ever. And that is a huge demand area. And they usually start taking trains of new crop from the Midwest in October, and they're having such a huge crop. Does that get pushed back into like November, December? So, you know, that doesn't sound like, well, it's a month. It's not a big deal. Well, what that does do though, is if those trains aren't moving at the same pace, I mean, if you think about it, if you have 100 car train, let's just say 3,000 bushels per car, that's a lot of bushels leaving on one train. And if they take multiple trains at a time, that's a lot of bushels that have to find a new home in the dead heat of harvest.
In a set amount of time.
And I heard White Commercial, who we broker through, and they help elevators like us out, you know, just make sure that we do the best job for our customers, right? And I will give them one credit. They were talking about it early this year. I mean, real early. They're like, they were talking about elevators down there trying to figure out how to make sure that they take care of their customers and are able to handle this crop. Cause it was looking so big, and right now it's still looking big.
Yeah.
So that's another piece that we don't usually think about. We usually just think about the Southeast. Oh yeah. Rail's going to go down there. We're going to make some money on that deal and all that. And they have to buy our corn. Well, yeah, they do. They still need our corn. Just not at the same time. And so that just backs us up. And, you know, beans, if there's no exports, at some point you would have to think like the Pacific Northwest and CIF values and the Eastern Seaboard, those crushers are going to get their needs filled. And if there's still no exports going on, what are you going to do with it? Where's it going to go?
It'll start piling up.
Yeah. So I don't want to be all doom and gloom, but those are some pieces playing in the background that they need to be looked at. They need to be talked about. You know, we've rallied some from the last couple, you know, month and a half or so. We've definitely gotten back up in values. So I would say for a farm level that's probably undersold, it probably wouldn't be a bad idea to start talking to your local elevators, local merchandisers, your trusted advisors. It's not a bad time to possibly, if you feel undersold, if you feel like you need to get some risk taken off of the table for you, it sounds bad, but maybe we're playing defense on what it could go to. These prices don't make a lot of people money at all, but at some point you're kind of limiting your losses.
But if you feel like you're undersold, I think what I'm hearing is you're telling me there's no indicators that says this market should run up anytime soon.
It can, but it can also go the other way. And I think that's just where every operation is different. But when you're looking at interest rates where they are, the cost of inputs where they are, and that whole dynamic going on, I mean, it's got its own supply and demand issues. And it just, for a picture that looks bleak, now's the time to, you know, if it sucks to play defense, but sometimes you got to play defense.
All right. Well, that might be a pretty good spot to wrap up on. All right. Well, we will continue on through the harvest. I see you're getting busier over there at the elevator. So, always busy watching the trucks roll in and out of there. So that is another episode of the High Ground powered by Premier Companies. Thank you all very much.